Hello, good afternoon, and welcome to the Weekend Report. It's FM News Talk 97.1. Tony Colombo and Katie Bailey here. The great Chris Arps is not here. Where's Chris?
He's taking a little vacay. Myrtle Beach.
I knew he was somewhere cool.
Yeah, he's on the beach right now sipping a mimosa or some kind of cocktail.
I would like to remind you and the audience that when I was on vacation, I called in.
You did. So, Chris.
He doesn't care about us.
You know, he doesn't.
He's sipping mimosas on the beach.
He's not thinking about us one bit.
Care one bit about us.
How selfish. What a selfish man he is.
That's all right. We've replaced him, we can move on. No, I'm kidding.
Chris will
be back next week. Can't wait to have him back in studio. But we have brought in the capable hands of the mayor of Ferguson, James Knowles, is going to be filling in for Chris today. How are you, Mr. Mayor?
I'm doing great. I'm doing better than Chris because I saw on Facebook that he's in the house watching it rain outside in Myrtle Beach.
So he
has no reason not to call in.
No kidding.
Dang.
Even more reason to sit there and call in.
Let's harass him. More harassment.
Let's prank him.
Let's prank him.
Also joining us in studio, kind of a bonus, our friend Gabe Pfeiffer, a.k.a. St. John the Philosopher, from his YouTube show of the same name. And Gabe was going to be our guest in the next segment, but since you're here early, we just brought you in and start the show with us.
Sounds great. Good to be with you guys.
So we will talk more with Gabe about his show and pick his brain a little bit in the interview segment that we're going to do next. But like I said, since Gabe was here, we decided to just bring him in the studio, start the show with him so we can do the weekend review with Gabe and Ferguson Mayor James Knowles and, of course, myself and Katie. This is the Weekend Report. Don't forget about our website, 971talk.com/weekendreport. You can go there and download our podcasts absolutely free. So if you miss a show or you missed an interview or you heard an interview and you want to hear it again, you can always download them absolutely free or listen to them right there on the website anytime you want. Again, that's 971talk.com/weekendreport. Also, on that same page, we have our very fun YouTube video player, and we try to make videos throughout the week, post content for you there all week long. So the podcasts and the videos and everything for you anytime you want them at 971talk.com/weekendreport. Like I said, we start every week with what we call the Week in Review, where we take a look back at all the big stories of the week. And this week, like every other week these days, has not disappointed. So take it away, Katie Bailey.
So last week we talked about how we thought the Greitens case was going to consume the conversations of the Week in Report. But it got dropped at the last second on Monday. What was everyone's reaction to that?
I'm not surprised the case got dropped. I'm surprised it got dropped when it did. Mm-hmm. I'm surprised that, like, they were there. Everybody was there in the courtroom. Jury was basically picked. And then it got dropped. I figured if you were going to drop it, you wouldn't have gotten that far with it. It really made the prosecution look ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. I think it looked better for the prosecution to drop it now than what I had heard some defense attorney friends of mine saying, you know, if they got to the end of the government's case and the judge isn't even satisfied that they even made a, you know, half a case, he can just stop it right there.
Right.
And I had
so what's
some, I,
more
so,
embarrassing?
So what's more embarrassing? The judge saying, oh, you should be you should be embarrassed. Just stop right now. or just backing out and saying, you know what? I'm not getting a vibe.
This judge
keeps ripping me every time I open my mouth. They're talking about sanctioning me. Now they're going to call me on the witness stand. Let's just quit while I'm way behind.
Right.
So.
Well, and they still have an opportunity to refile, and I heard that was going to be something they're exploring. I don't know why.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But, you know.
I think that's more of a, like, save face statement. Like, as you're, you know, like, as you're walking
I'll
away
be
from the
back.
I'm going to get you. I'll get you next time. Like, that's just what you say.
Darn
as you're,
you and
as
your,
you're running
your dog,
away.
You silly kids.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's what happens after you just got knocked out in a title fight.
Right.
And then you get back up, like, well, I'm going to do a rematch.
Yeah.
Like, really?
No, not really.
I got you next time. Yeah, I think that was a save face moment on the walking out of the courtroom. I don't think the. And if they do refile with a special prosecutor, I don't think they have very much time. I think it's like a month before the statute of limitations runs on that whole thing.
I think
anyway.
It just extends for a month, they said.
And yeah. So I don't see them throwing all that together in a month, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
they already have pull the photo out of a hat somewhere. Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
And they already have and that's what we can kind of get into here in a second. But They already have another. They already have another case pending, that another felony charge is going to be starting relatively soon. And of course, this special session to impeach. So it's not like they have they can just let this one go. Probably should have let this one go from the very beginning and focus on the spots where they have, in my opinion, at least a better case.
Do you guys think since the special session in Jeff City is it is going to begin, and you know they're possibly exploring the factor that they might impeach the governor? What do you guys think? Is that going to happen? Do you think they actually can do that?
I thought for sure he was. I would have said a week ago, I would have said he's going to be impeached. But that was before. But this was a lifeline this week for him, I think, with this case being thrown out. Because now he can say, look, it was a witch hunt, false allegations. They didn't even have enough. They didn't even weren't even confident enough in the charges to even take it to trial.
Yeah.
So, you know, so it gave him new life. I think at the end, I don't know if this special session that just started on yesterday is going to be what gets him, but as we watch all this play out, I in the end, maybe he's not impeached, but his political career is over.
I think, you know, there's the impeachment, which is actually the starting the process of a trial of some sort, however they decide to, you know, prosecute it. And then there's actually removal from office.
Mm-hmm.
I think he'll end up getting impeached. I don't think he'll be removed from office. I think he's going to have, I mean, here's a guy, I think you said his political career is over, but it's going to be scorched earth. And I think he's going to start taking down people with him. And they need to start thinking about that. I mean, you have legislators, my state representative, you know, he got fined $116,000 for a campaign violation, much like the governor got a campaign violation. But if he pays 10% of it up front, then, you know, all goes away. Because he took $80,000-something and spent it on himself and didn't account for it. In the business world, we call that embezzlement. You should go to jail. If you're a state legislator, that's a campaign violation. Smack on your hand.
10% fine.
Unless you're the governor and they hate you, now they are going to come and turn this into...
Now you're impeached.
And I think that and a million other issues are going to come up to the surface, and the governor is going to start saying, hey, you know, are we all measuring each other with the same stick here? That's been his thing from the beginning. And I think that some legislators are going to say, look, I don't want to start bringing the magnifying glass on me and where I got my campaign money,
right?
Who I got it from, and who shuffled it to me. I mean, this is a little too much.
There are going to be a lot of politicians with their heads down during this whole proceeding.
Sure. Yeah. But what happens to Kim Gardner? Because she has some things that, you know, I think the governor and his lawyers were trying to say that they would like to sue Kim Gardner for things. So what happens to her in this mess, I wonder.
Who knows?
I think, like I said, scorched earth.
Yeah.
I mean, here it is. You ran on the swamp. You ran on this being a swamp. You obviously aren't clean, Governor, but it's easy to say, hey, we're all going down together. I mean, we'll take you down.
I'll take you down, yeah.
And I hate to say it, the senility that I think a lot of people have with politics is that people will say, you know what, they're all crooked. I really don't even, you know, why are they coming after him?
Good point.
The thing with the governor is, let me ask if you guys agree with me on this. His whole life would be a lot better off right now if he hadn't run on such a religious,
clean
family man. I am perfect. I am the clean white warrior.
I am the Navy SEAL.
And I don't mean white, like white skin. I mean like clean white. There's no stains on me. I am a family guy. I'm a Navy SEAL.
You ran the Jesus campaign.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm the perfect politician. Yeah,
everything I do is through the lens of faith and family.
Yeah.
And then all of this stuff comes out that maybe wouldn't be so bad. Like people have called this show and other shows on this station and said, well, how can you support Donald Trump and not support Eric Greitens? Well, Donald Trump never portrayed to be some religious family man leader. He just said, I can fix the economy, and I can and I can cut better trade deals.
And I'm going to fight these guys who you don't like.
Exactly. I think that all this is stuck more on the governor, because and everybody's like that. If somebody sits there and tells you how much they're into their family and their faith and how that's their everything, and then all this comes out, an affair wouldn't stick with other politicians as much as it does with somebody who says his family and his wife are his entire life. Same way with the campaign with the money from or the Mission Continues donor list. Okay, a little bit of fudging, that's, you know, that's probably something that most politicians can kind of make go away, or some people would be like, okay, that's not that big of a deal. But again, when you say, I don't do anything wrong, I do everything by the letter of the law and I'm this perfect, all these little, these seemingly little things that may not stick to other politicians look terrible on him.
Yeah,
you agree?
Definitely, definitely. I mean, if you portray yourself as Captain America and you turn out to be Jack Sparrow, we're gonna notice. You know,
perfect.
But if you say you're Jack Sparrow, people like Jack Sparrow.
Exactly.
So they're like,
he owns it. You know,
exactly.
So the special session with the governor's lawyers, they're also asking to possibly publicly question his ex-mistress. What do you guys think? Should that happen? Should that not happen? Do you think it would help Greitens' case?
I like what Mary Knowles said, scorched earth. This is like, if you're bringing this woman that doesn't want to have anything, she didn't want to have anything to do with this case to begin with, and you're going to force her to publicly testify in Jeff City. I don't know. I don't see how that could, even if the governor's lawyers, if the governor's team gets exactly the answers they want from her. Mm-hmm. Don't they look like bullies for making her come out and speak when she obviously she's never the one that wanted anything out of this? She wasn't the one bringing these charges against the governor. She wasn't trying to get anything from the governor or the state. She didn't want any money. She didn't want any fame. She didn't want. So just the fact that you're dragging her out, even if you get her to say everything you want her to say, don't you look terrible?
I think this is where you can score some points and maybe soften things a little bit by saying, look, we welcome her to tell her side of the story because we'd liked it to be aired. But if she wants her privacy and she didn't want anything to do with this in the first place, we respect that. And maybe Kim Gardner should have taken a different clue from that from the beginning. But, I think this is one of those things where it could still go south. I think they may have already proven their point as it pertains to this case. You know, with where we've gone with the case and being dropped, to bring it out any further, I think the legislature will do it because they're continuing to try to push this issue.
Don't they have to at this point? I would think the best thing morally and soundly would be to not pressure her to do something like this.
Right.
But the case has gone on so fast and it's prolonged for such a great amount of time that don't we have to hear her side of the story now?
I think there's a lot of people out there going, okay, well, this case got thrown out, so this issue's over with. Let's talk about, we've talked about the mistress in the picture for long enough.
Yeah.
I think people might be sick of it.
I think the legislature is the ones that keeps pushing this because they keep talking about her testimony in secret to that committee that, you know, oh, well, her other testimony, no, it was spot on. And so I think a lot of people are like, fine, then what did she say? And can she be cross-examined? I don't think that it would be smart for the governor's side to push it.
Here's the bottom line is the circus was not canceled. It was just delayed. It was supposed to be here this week.
Move to a new venue.
Yeah, exactly. It was supposed to be here this week with the beginning of this trial, but the trial got thrown out. But now with these impeachment, the considering of matters of impeachment that's happening, that's going to be the new circus. Last week we said this was going to be the week that was dominated by Greitens' headlines. It's going to be next week. It's going to be dominated by Greitens' headlines.
So quickly, the Missouri House voted this week to establish a minimum age for marriage. I'm getting married, by the way. The amendment would make 16 the minimum age for marriage in Missouri. Is that too young? 16.
From a guy who got married at 32 for the first time, I would say absolutely.
From a guy who has a daughter that turns 15 next month,
yeah,
it's too young.
Tony better start saving up for a dowry.
Yeah. 16 seems just way, you don't even understand the world. When I was, remember when you were 16?
Everything
like, homework sucks.
I think they
part-time
need to,
jobs suck.
I think that they need to decide what age is an adult.
Actual majority.
Yeah.
And they
need
actual
to,
majority.
Yeah, and they need to make that across the board.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No
I,
more
I totally
18
agree.
For some
I
things
totally
and 16 for some things and 21 for some things. Pick an age when kids become adults and put it all in that number.
So 17 now, you're not an adult to murder somebody, but 16 you can get married now.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy.
Exactly.
It's crazy.
Can't drink at your wedding, though.
Right.
Oh, that's terrible.
For 5 more years. All right, let's take a quick break. When we get back, we will talk to Gabe Pfeiffer, St. John the Philosopher. Keep it right here on The Weekend Report. It's FM News Talk 97.1. Would you let me towel dry up on your private parts? From your head to your toes, girl, tell me where to start. Hello and welcome back to The Weekend Report. It's FM News Talk 97.1. Tony Colombo and Katie Bailey here. Chris Arps is on vacation, so Mayor James Knowles of Ferguson is joining us in the studio. And as I mentioned in the last segment, he was here for this interview segment, but he was here early, so we had him join us for the weekend review. Gabe Pfeiffer, a.k.a. St. John the Philosopher, the St. John the Philosopher YouTube show is one of my favorite things to watch. I was this week I was doing a lot of work outside in the yard. I actually text you, Gabe. I was doing
a love
whole
note.
Lot of
it was long.
I know. I was doing a
please
lot of
please be on the show.
I was doing a lot of landscaping and work in the house outside at the house and was keeping myself busy by listening to podcasts the entire time. And I went down a St. John the Philosopher wormhole and I listened to every single episode.
Oh my!
All at once. All that I had already heard at least once when they came out, but at the end of it, I was like,
"Man, you're so good."
Yeah, it was both heartening and embarrassing at the same time. It was great.
Look, I was really tired from working outside.
It's all
day.
Good, man. I love you too.
I was
too,
exhausted.
Man. It's good.
I was emotional, but I meant it. I meant every word I said. I think that it's one of the best shows on YouTube. I love the way that you analyze different topics, very timely with your shows and addressing, you know, like I think the most recent episode is about gun rights,
mm-hmm.
and you know that's obviously a very timely
issue
right now. Before we get into like details of stuff, just tell folks what the St. John the Philosopher show is, how they can listen to it, and you know how you your perspective on things.
Well, I am a trained rocket scientist. That's mm-hmm. that's right. That's actually my profession.
That's a right. That's not an exaggeration
not
or yeah.
I have a degree in aerospace engineering from MIT. Mm-hmm. So, and you know, I'm a Christian. I'm a black conservative. So I have a particular point of view with a particular and a particular set of skills. And I put those to use on my show where I talk about everything from religion to culture and politics and just kind of my perspective on it. And it's St. John the Philosopher on YouTube. I'm the only one.
Yeah.
So you put St. John P in there and I'm going to come up.
Right.
And then philosopher_ST on Twitter. I occasionally tweet some salty memes out there. so you can taste some of that. Mm-hmm. But other than that, yeah, I just love talking about this stuff and sharing my perspective. Sometimes I feel like my perspective doesn't really exist out there because it's not quite as screamy, I think,
right.
as a lot of the punditry out there.
Yeah,
goes.
Rationality doesn't always have a place.
No,
but
it doesn't seem that, you know, and I like to do a robust and thorough investigation of a particular subject.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to go all the way down to, okay, what's the root of this? What's really behind all of this stuff? And I kind of look at everything that way. So
right.
I try to put that into the show, along with my love of movies and comic books and sci-fi and all that stuff. And I put a lot of movie drops in there.
Yeah, it's very well produced.
It's fun.
Yeah, it's very well produced. And I look at it like this. It's like, you know, when you see a band like in a little nightclub, one year, and then a couple years later, they come back and they're playing like at a stadium. You're like, I was there, man. I was there at the beginning.
I was there, yeah.
I was there when nobody else was there.
Yeah.
It's because the show is so new. You've only done a handful of episodes.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, get in now. Get in on the ground floor and be like, I was there, man. When this thing got started, I was on the ground floor. I've been with this dude since the beginning. So, you know what? Let's talk a little bit about the most recent episode of St. John the Philosopher, because, like I said, it is a very timely episode. Talk about, just give the brief, your brief standpoint on gun control and the whole gun issue, and what you get in, what you explore in that episode.
Sure, sure. Now, again, you know, since I like to go to the very, you know, bottom of the situation, okay, what's at the root of all this? So then I end up talking about rights, and I have a video that I did about exploring rights and what natural rights are and where they come from and why we have them and all that. And so I start from that perspective, you know. And the natural right to self-defense is self-evident. It's built into the other rights. It kind of creates a it links all of the other rights together, the life, liberty, and property idea. And, you know, so that's where the whole gun rights thing comes from. And that's why it's been recognized by the Constitution. So from there, then we get to the question, okay, well, what are the restrictions that we can put in? What's all this talk? And like, well, if any of that puts an impediment to the natural right, then you can't go there. Mm-hmm. And then I go to the bottom of, well, what's the real issue we're talking about? What is the real thing that everybody wants to get at? And the issue is all these people killing each other with guns, mm-hmm. right? And that is a little more complicated, because it isn't about rights. It isn't about the various legislation that can be put into place.
The political correctness. People try to dance around, and they don't just get to the point.
And the point ultimately is that we have a cultural problem. You know, it's, you know, when guns were ubiquitous and they were inside the school, literally, or in the parking lots, in gun racks, and you know, kids going hunting with their dad after school would bring them to school and show the other kids, look what my dad just got me today. Mm-hmm. You know, we didn't have school shootings, but now we have one every few months, it seems.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
yeah.
What's the difference? Is the difference in the availability of guns or the proliferation of guns, the placement of the guns? No, it's the culture, it's the people that's at issue here.
You know what I think is amazing is you really talk about the policies and you really get in deep on that. And I think what's terrible for America is that political hacks make policy for all of us, right? You know, I go back to, so my master's is in public policy, and I remember what you just talked about. I mean, you could have taught, you know, our first intro to public policy class, when you start talking about, what's the real problem, right?
Right.
What are we talking about that's the issue? People like to talk about, well, guns are the problem. Is it guns or violence? Mm-hmm. Is it guns or murders? Is it, you know, what are we really talking about here? And when you break it down like that, a lot of people don't like that because they already have a preconceived notion of what the solution is.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, there's other theories in public policy that people have solutions, and I think we all know this, right? There's people just, there's solutions floating around, and everybody's got their favorite one,
sure.
and they're just looking for a problem to throw it at.
Oh, gosh.
And people who don't like guns are like, ooh, school shooting, get rid of guns, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, there's more violence, get rid of guns, you know? Yeah. Gun blew up in somebody's hand at the range, get rid of the gun.
If you're a hammer, everything looks like a nail.
Absolutely. And I think what you do is very important, because people need to understand, if you have serious systemic problems, it has to have real, you know, multifaceted public policy changes to make that happen. And you know, sometimes, like you said, public policy is not going to fix it.
No.
You got to fix the culture. You got to fix things in our lives as people, as Americans. That's social. That's harder to change than passing a law.
Yeah, they're not going to fix this in Washington, that's for sure.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Yeah.
Gabe, how much do you get, so you, as you mentioned, you're big at the at our church. Mm-hmm. You're you know, a church leader, a black Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And then you say conservative.
Yes.
So in your life, how much, because we know Chris Arps is the normal co-host of this show, and I've seen just some of the social media backlash he gets for being a black conservative.
Oh yeah.
What have you experienced, and how do you answer that?
Well, I kind of take it the same way I took criticisms I took when I was a kid, and I would actually bring my books home because I wanted to learn things. And people took issue with that and said I was white. I was trying to be
acting white.
Oh, yeah. When I'm speaking properly, you're trying to act white. Although I'm speaking the way my dad taught me to. And, right. And you know, my dad, you know, having grown up in segregated, you know, North Carolina, you know, is not to be confused with, you know, with a white bread.
Somebody who's trying to act white.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, and he's the one who would, you know, smack me across the face if I said word weird.
Right.
Yeah, I take the current criticism of my ideology or my thinking the same way as I took that one. It's like, yeah, that doesn't work on me. My mind's too strong for that. Mm-hmm.
Do you get a lot of pushback in your social groups or your family? Do you have family members that are constantly saying, "How could you do this to us? You know, why are you? You know, you're a traitor of some kind." Do you get any of that?
Well, my family is so tight that, you know, whatever political differences we have are really kind of irrelevant to us.
Good.
You know,
that's the way it should be.
So yeah, I mean, we rarely get into political discussions in the first place. I mean, yeah. I mean, my brother-in-law is running for office as a Democrat in the Maryland area.
Okay.
So we don't talk much, but we, you know, we play PS4 together.
you take him out on Call of Duty. That's what you get.
Exactly.
Was it the gun or was it me?
Exactly. But I mean, in that regard, you know, family's my rock there. I'm locked down on those guys. But yeah, you know, online you occasionally get the, "Oh, you're just cooning for the man," or you know, dance minstrel or whatever. God. You know, all that good stuff.
I can't believe it when I see it. Some of the things.
What's most
the
amazing
on
though?
Your YouTube page is crazy.
Yeah. Oh, well, like I've said this before in Ferguson, Mayor, when I was down there going through the terrible Michael Brown protests that you lived. There was no group of people that got more abuse from the protesters than black police officers.
Oh, yeah.
The protesters couldn't believe the black police officers were, you know, doing their job and not letting them, you know, do terrible things to City Hall and the police department.
Yeah, the idea of the traitorous black man or woman or what have you is kind of ingrained, and I'm not sure where it came from. I mean, I'm sure at some point, you know, you go back to the slavery days.
It came from the Democratic Party.
Well, yeah, we can get into that. But I mean, if you go back far enough, you have the slaves who were more complicit and who helped the man to, you know, to put down you know, uppity slaves and whatnot. So there's that idea, and I think, in large part, the Democratic Party has convinced black people that the conservative black people are the house slaves, which is another one of those invectives.
We're like
we
completely out of time. This is not a 30-second question, but the other one I have for you is being a scientist, being somebody who is a literal rocket scientist, and weighing that against your religious beliefs. Because, you know, you always hear people, Christians don't believe in science. Mm-hmm. Because, so do you have a 30-second answer to that? Or
Well, my 30-second answer is that science is part of God's revelation. The Bible talks about natural it discusses that the idea that the heavens proclaim the glory of the Lord. And so the thing is, even all the early scientists were Christian men, and they looked at their vocation as a ministry. They were exploring God's creation, and they were answering the how question. But Christianity answers the why and who question.
I like it. If you want more St. John the Philosopher Show on YouTube, Gabe Pfeiffer is the host. Gabe, give the how they can listen to the show or watch the show, follow you on social media, all that good stuff.
All right, St. John the Philosopher on YouTube, philosopher_ST on Twitter, and I've got a brand new video coming out talking about masculinity and the debunking the idea of toxic masculinity, and I use the movie Die Hard.
All right.
I'm on it. That's
check
awesome.
It out on YouTube, St. John the Philosopher, and we are going to take a quick break. We get better, more of the Weekend Report. Keep right here on FM News Talk 97.1. Welcome back to the Weekend Report. It's FM News Talk 97.1. Tony Colombo and Katie Bailey here. Chris Arps is on vacation. He will be back next week. But the mayor of Ferguson, Mayor James Knowles, has joined us in studio this week to fill in for Chris. Mr. Mayor, thank you again for giving us a hand today. Joining us on the phone right now, our special guest this week is Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaffer. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaffer. He is the Vice President of Operations for the London Center of Policy Research, and the Lieutenant Colonel can definitely shed some expertise on the things that are happening in around the world right now and in the government. So, Colonel, thank you so much for joining us. How are you today?
I'm very well. Thanks for having me. Good to be on.
Yeah, you bet. So plenty of places that we could start. I'd like to start with getting your thoughts on the confirmation of Gina Haspel. I know that you had a lot of that you were very active around the time of 9/11 and that, you know, that was sort of where the criticism came in against Gina Haspel for her actions and the CIA's actions that she sort of oversaw immediately following 9/11 with the allegations of torture. What do you think of Gina Haspel, and what do you think of that whole history that she has?
Yeah, look, first, your listeners can go to The Hill, the online publication that covers all the stuff out here. And I did an editorial called Gina Haspel, the real deal. So I kind of go through all the factors which we're talking about. And she and I are both operations officers. We're both trained by CIA at a place called The Farm. She went through a little bit ahead of me in 85. I went through in 88. And again, ironically enough, during the time frame that we're talking, the early 2000s, she was in command of a CIA station, and I was in command of a joint operating base. We call ours operating bases, they call their stations, a joint CIA Defense Intelligence Agency base that was focused on going after terrorists in Africa. So she was in Thailand, I was in Africa, focusing on these targets. And the point I'm trying to make, by the way, you guys can go Google my retirement bio. It's online, a congressional record. What I'm saying is that she and I were practitioners. We were in the field doing the hard work of executing policy. That was her job. And so the criticism she's had and I've seen levied on her is not appropriate by the fact that a guy named John Brennan, who was at the policy level above her, was the one who actually was responsible for the framework of the so-called Enhanced Interrogation Program. And by the way, we all know that he was given a pass multiple times by Congress. So to me, it's completely inappropriate for members of Congress of both parties to single her out for having executed effectively the policies of the United States, which were legally sound at that time, while the guy who actually orchestrated things, which now people say are illegal, was given a pass. You can't say it's okay for John Brennan to be director of CIA and not say it's okay for her by the fact that she did not have the ability to say no. So that's where I have grave exceptions to the way at least three members of the Republican Party and other members of the Democrat Party have attempted to politicize and attempt her from being director of CIA. So she successfully passed that, but I think the debate was inappropriate.
Colonel, this is James Knowles. So,
hey, James.
You know, when people talk about the waterboarding and the enhanced interrogation, the naysayers like to throw out the word torture constantly, and I always think it's disingenuous because it elicits, you know, in people's minds, it elicits these pictures from TV of pulling out fingernails and hooking up people to alligator clamps and, you know, electrocuting them, or watch the movie Taken, you know, and you're out there torturing this guy until he talks and cranking up the wattage. That's nothing like that is even been accused of her or anybody in our intelligence services that I know of. Is that correct?
That's correct. No, you're absolutely correct. Waterboarding is a common tool used as part of the survival, escape, and evasion course that we run for aviators, for special operations folks, and that sort of thing. And frankly, here, let me get tell a secret. If you are down going through the training at the farm and you mess up bad enough, you may end up getting waterboarded. I'm just telling you that is part of the idea. It's used as training. So that's the bottom line. No, we don't pull people's fingernails out. We don't put them in front of the TV and watch reruns of The View, which would be very much torture. I'm digressing, but no, we don't do those very severe things that others have accused people of doing. So,
and you know, I can put myself back in my body and my mindset after 9/11,
right.
And you could have told me at that time, I am not for torture. I don't think that's a good thing, and I don't want the United States, you know, doing those types of things. But after 9/11, if you could have told me that we could prevent another attack or save American lives, but we had to do some uncomfortable things to bad people, I would have had no problem with that. And I think that's how a lot of people felt back then. And now, even some of the same people in Congress, some of the same lawmakers that had that prerogative, you know, after 9/11, are now looking back through the filter of today's values, and now they're changing their minds. And if they're going to change their minds and try to hold Gina Haspel accountable for actions back then don't they have to do the same thing to themselves? Because those are the lawmakers that all made those techniques legal back then.
Right. Absolutely. And that's the point. I mean, both Democrats and Republicans approved of those methods, the Gang of Eight. There was at least tacit approval at the senior level. And it is, again, unconscionable to me, especially by the fact that Ms. Haspel is not only technically qualified, she is literally the first woman now who's going to be director of CIA. And boy, just to me, it drives me nuts that you see this hypocrisy on the left, where they're all about women and minorities until it's someone that is inconvenient to this election. Yeah, and so it just makes no sense to me. And again, to your point, we've got people in Congress who grandstand constantly. I was at an event last night with the director of ICE, Mr. Homan, and he was talking about how, you know, his ICE agents have been accused of being cowards by members of Congress. And it's all about the fact that, ICE is enforcing the laws of the nation, and that's inconvenient to certain members of Congress who just want to grandstand. So that's the problem with Congress today. It's all about grandstanding.
Talking to retired Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaffer. Lieutenant Colonel, in your experience, your opinion, does enhanced interrogation techniques work? Is it a good tool for the CIA, or is it a bygone thing that we don't need to be looking back at?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I got to be careful because of certain things I'm aware of, and
sure.
I'll answer it this way.
I understand.
It's an effective tool that should always be available to anyone who needs it at the time of need. Mm-hmm. I don't believe for a minute that we should be telling people who are flying airplanes what button to push at a given time from Washington. People are there. They understand the situation. And again, I'll reference this to your audience. They can look it up. Operation Darkheart is a book I wrote about my time in Afghanistan, where we did an interrogation where the guy was deprived of sleep. We hammered him, not physically, but mentally, mercilessly, about some of his fears. And some of the people who read the book were upset about the fact that, oh my God, you really troubled the guy. Yeah, we troubled him because we wanted him to talk, and he eventually broke. So the idea here is you need to allow people in the field who are professionals who do this for a living to choose the methodology necessary to achieve the objective of getting critical information. That's the bottom line. So I just get upset. Maybe this is the Jack Bauer in me. I get upset with dealing with politicians in Washington who have no clue about how things actually work in the real world, trying to tell me how to do my job. So,
well, Colonel, that's funny you said that. I mean, you must have been reading my paper here because, you know, at this time when this was going on, this 24 was one of the most popular shows in the history of, still is one of the most popular in the history of TV. And, you know, I think it really makes people think about, like you mentioned, the policy versus the practitioner, the person in the field doing what they think they have to do given the circumstances at that time. I mean, Jack Bauer did some pretty bad things, and he was held accountable for it in the end, but he did what he thought he had to do, you know, to save 10 million people, you know, from blowing up New York City with a nuke or things like that. You know, we don't as a government want to condone some of those activities. But at some point, you know, hindsight is always 20/20, and you know, I think you kind of struck a good balance by saying, you've got to be careful about what we say we will and won't do. Certainly realizing that saving the lives of Americans and people around the world is probably paramount.
That should be, I think, the bellwether of the standard. I mean, look, I've had to testify before Congress on intelligence failures, and that's what resulted in me becoming a public figure. I was outed by Congress on that. It happens. But look, if you sign up to be an operative, if you're out there doing the hard work for the real reasons that you want to be loyal to the American people and your oath of office, you're going to have Jack Bauer moments. It's inevitable, because fundamentally there are going to be politicians, and by the way, people in the intelligence community who align themselves with the politicians for purposes of political gain. A guy named John Brennan was a master of that.
Yeah.
And so people like John are politicians who are more than happy to suck up and take any political position which benefits them at that moment, and they'll be the first to put a knife in your back. And by the way, I'm speaking from multiple friends of mine who I came up through school with. Talk about John Brennan's treachery, and I think I'm hoping John's going to get his comeuppance here soon based on some of the things I'm hearing. But with that said, you know, our job is to do that hard work of protecting the American people, and it's not always pleasant. It's not always, something that's going to be PG rated, but it's necessary, and that's why the American people, I think, do have the best intelligence and special operations community in the world.
That is Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaffer. Unfortunately, Colonel, we are out of time. Remind folks before we let you go one more time about your book and your column and anything else that people can read or that you've written and follow you on social media, anything you want to put out there for people.
Sure. Well, I'm too spooky on Twitter. I've got a lot of followers. And then I work for the London Center for Policy Research, londoncenter.org. We're kind of a Reagan-based think tank. We do a lot of stuff to advise the current administration. And then my book, Operation Dark Heart, covers my undercover work in Afghanistan in 2003 and 2004. So, again, thank you for having me on. It's been great to talk to you.
You bet. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaffer, I hope we get a chance to talk to you again in the future. It's a good time.
Thanks, Colonel.
Great. Thank you.
All right. Let's take a quick break. Be back with more of The Week in Report. Keep it right here on FM News Talk 97.1. But just like a fish in an oil spill, since you're taking your love away from me, you no longer have the will and aim. Welcome back to The Weekend Report. It's FM News Talk 97.1. Tony Colombo and Katie Bailey here. Chris Arp's on vacation. Mayor James Knowles of Ferguson is filling Chris's shoes and in with us today as our special guest host. And also joining us in studio now, as he does every week, from Weber Chevrolet, Skip Weber. Skip, what's happening, dude?
It's going good. I think Chris Arps takes almost as many vacations as I do.
He was just on a honeymoon not that long ago.
Exactly.
I mentioned earlier in the show, when I was on vacation at Disney World with my family, I still made time to call into this show, and haven't heard from Chris. Sipping mimosas on the beach, and he's not even thinking about us. Not even considering us.
That kind of hurts my feelings a little bit.
Right. I'm going to tell him that.
I'm new to coming in here.
I'm going to tell him that. All right. In a little bit, Skip's going to be in here for the whole rest of the show with us, the entire hour. And I've done a lot of talking when I talk about Weber Chevrolet. I've been talking a lot lately about the service department and not necessarily sale prices, car prices. You know, everybody does that. They talk about we're the cheapest. You know, we can get you the best deal, all that kind of stuff.
It's the easiest thing to go to.
In my opinion, not sure that it's the most important.
You look at the size of our property, and the sales makes up just a small part of it.
Right, right.
Service department is huge.
So Sean Chambliss
is here. Two-thirds of our employees.
Sean Chambliss from Weber Chevrolet is here. He's part of the service department there. Sean's the guy that I always work with when I need something done on one of my vehicles. And we're not going to get into this right now, but I just want to kind of set the tone that we are going to talk with Skip about Weber Chevrolet in a little bit and how important that service department is and how, in my opinion, it really sets Weber Chevrolet apart from the others, because of the great work that you guys do throughout the life of a a vehicle that somebody gets from you. I think it's smart business to have such a great service department because it keeps people coming back. You build their trust.
We brought Sean in because if he's patient and good enough to work with both Tony Colombo and Dave Glover in their personal vehicles, he can do anything.
It can't be Dave Glover's got to be a little bit tougher to deal with. But first, before we get into all that, we need to get into, it's the top of the hour, and every week at this time, we do another segment of the Week in Review, where we look back at all the big stories that happened this week. James Knowles, Ferguson Mayor, is here with us as well. I wanted to talk to you, Mr. Mayor. We focused on some of the more local issues in the last Week in Review segment. Wanted to talk to you in this segment about some of the more international or national news. Of course, probably the biggest story of the week internationally was at the beginning of the week when the U.S. Embassy was moved from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, something many presidents have promised but none have done. And that has now been done. There were protests, of course. Everybody knew there were going to be protests. The president has gotten some criticism because of those violent protests for moving the embassy so quickly that he did. What are your thoughts on that whole issue? Did you think the president did the right thing by moving the embassy?
Well, look, I think you do the right thing by doing what you say you're going to do. And, you know, a lot of people complain about what Trump does, but he says all along what he's going to do. And he said he was going to do this. I think the last four presidents have said they were going to do this. Mm-hmm. He's the only one that actually did it. So you got to give him props for that. You know, I'm a firm believer, though, in not poking the bear. So, you know, in this case, I don't know if it's going to have the political payoff for him. Maybe it will in the Middle East. You know, I think you'll probably see this subside. I mean, the protests and the violence, I mean, I think it'll subside fairly quickly. I haven't seen or heard any real strong reaction from like our real strong allies in the Middle East, the Arab states that are allies. So, in that respect, I mean, I guess he did the right thing. I mean, you gotta fulfill your promises at some point.
Yeah. Going back to your level of government and leading, you know, you've obviously you brought Ferguson through the terrible Michael Brown protests, and you know that situation tore Ferguson apart, but you were reelected. So, you know, how important is it for a politician to stick to their guns, be themselves even in the face of adversity, keep your promises, be who you are, don't change because something unexpected happened and you're, you know, how important is that? And do you feel like the president has done that?
I think that's what he's got going for him. And you're absolutely right. I can tell you that at any given moment, people who love me may hate me.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I mean, because I'm very honest. I've tried to be fair, and I've tried to be very open and transparent with what we do. Sometimes that rubs people the wrong way because they don't like what you're doing. But I get told oftentimes that, you know what, I don't always agree with you, Mayor, but I respect you, and I know you're always going to do what you're going to do your homework. You're going to do what you believe is right. And even though I may not agree with it in the end or at first, I'm usually happy with the result. And so a lot of people stuck with me. And I think that is important for Trump here because, you know, he does have some credibility problems that people complain about, you know, it's times like this when he's doing exactly what he said. And so anybody who says, well, I don't know, I think I don't know that he's trustworthy. I don't know that he's, you know, telling the truth about this. You know, the more he does exactly what he says, I mean, you can't do anything but help you.
Right, right. This was not one of my questions that I have on my sheet here, but it just popped into my head. I want to get your thoughts on one of the big topics of discussion in Missouri politics. Politics all across the country has been term limits. And I know some states have issued term limits. I know Missouri has term limit laws in place for some offices like state rep and things like that. What are your thoughts on term limits? And Skip, I'd like to get your thoughts on this too.
Sure.
Are term limits a good thing or a bad thing? Because my quick opinion is I believe that elections are term limits. Now, do I think that there are people that have sat in government way too long and don't belong there anymore? Absolutely. But I think that it's the people's prerogative to vote those people out of office and to get them out of there and to get fresh blood in there when it's time. I don't want to see good politicians get ran out because they're term limited. So that's what I believe elections are for. But I completely understand the people that say, hey, this guy's been here for 20 years. They don't belong here for 20 years. What's your thoughts on term limits?
So I'm in my third and final term because we have term limits in Ferguson.
Okay.
You know, there's a lot of people who have come to me and said, like, what would it take for you to stay? I go, well, a charter change and
a law change.
And you need to talk to my wife a lot. But, you know, I worked in the state legislature at the time that term limits kicked out almost the entire legislature. And I saw that firsthand. And then I was lobbyist for 10 years throughout.
Was it a good thing or a bad thing when that happened?
There's so much institutional knowledge was lost. And one of the things we continue to see in Jefferson City is the public advocacy industry, lobbyists, government affairs people, are now the ones who retain all of the knowledge about what's been happening for the past 10 years, 20 mm-hmm. years, or 30 years.
Because they don't go anywhere.
You know, Ryan, you've got a whole legislature full of people who may have been a city councilman before, may have just been a car, insurance salesman or a car salesman, and then ran for office. Now they're the state legislature. They've got 8 years to make their mark and jump out the door. I see a lot of things rushed because of that. You know, mm-hmm. it used to be, I used to tell people all the time, from conception to passage, 5 years for anything that goes on in the legislature. Now it's 5 months. 5 months, and you can come up with an idea, and it's law tomorrow. And that's really a change in the way the legislature operated, and I think that's because people are there for 8 years. They know it, or less, and mm-hmm. they got to get out.
Yeah. That's a definite positive that it rushes things through.
Well, but it can make sloppy policy.
Yeah.
The process, the democratic process is supposed to be slow and deliberate for a reason.
Mm. What do you think,
Sam? Look, I'm a big history buff. What I'm not is a politician, so my perspective is from the outside looking in. But as a history buff, I have read a ton of biographies and letters from history, and I absolutely think that the founding fathers would be disgusted with the concept of career politicians.
Yeah,
they wanted people who do everyday things to bring their everyday knowledge to Washington or Richmond, Virginia, or Philadelphia, or wherever the local capitals and areas of government were, bring their everyday knowledge, share it, and then get out.
Yeah.
And I think, once again, from the outside looking in, what you just made was a great point. I have never seen that, but what I see and what I think is one of the worst things about politics and one of the bad things about where we're at is when you are elected to office, it seems to me that the very first day of office, you immediately begin to run for re-election.
Yes,
no, you're right.
Yes. And that gets in the way of a lot of
and
good being done.
And the bigger the office, the more campaigning.
And it's what makes you surprised when somebody like Donald Trump does what he says.
Yeah, right, right.
Because as soon as he gets in the office, they start governing by polls, and they say, well, that wasn't really as one of your more popular points, so you don't have to do it.
Right.
I think term limits is a potential good thing.
Yeah, yeah, I could totally see that. I guess, and I understand also that my point is probably a little Pollyannish because the fact is even in a big election, you're lucky to get 50% turnout. People just aren't as engaged as they should be, and that allows some of these, sort of shady characters to play the game right and stick around a lot longer than they should. Whereas I wish that people would just call these people out. If it's a bad politician, vote them out of there and put somebody else in.
I mean, I like your perspective on it because I agree with it, but I think the other problem that makes it tough for it to work out the way you said is that the process of campaigns are so tilted towards the incumbent.
Yeah, the incumbent has so much more power.
He's got so much more resources.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, if every year we got to start over and everybody got, $50,000 and said, you got $50,000, you got $50,000, now let's argue it out.
I think
that would work, but I mean, instead it's somebody's got $500 and the other guy's got $500,000 and you're like, well, he's a jerk. I'm like, yeah, well.
Well, I think it's one of the reasons on the national scale that they made representatives be 2 years and senators 6 years.
Yeah.
They said these guys, we don't want them to have to run for re-election because they're six, we want them to have a little bit more weight.
Yeah.
Yet they still do because
they
want to be in office forever.
I got a great question for the historian. So 6 year senators originally appointed by state legislatures, What's your thought on, there's even been some conversations about going back from the direct election of senators to appointed by the states, which is the way way it was originally done. What's your thoughts on that? I don't know if you've read anything about that.
I haven't read about that. I remember some books I've read about the Constitutional Convention and why they said that. And I don't think I've ever read or thought through why they changed that. I think it's probably pretty good for us to elect them directly.
I agree.
About the same result because we're the same people are electing both things. But
right.
But you know, then again, it might to have them separate might actually result in people looking more at the issues and the actual candidate than the R or the D by their name.
Well, I mean, it was kind of like a built-in term limits. I mean, the legislature, you know, you get to be appointed senator for 6 years and you were probably gone.
Right.
I know it was about accountability. They thought, well, these guys are unaccountable. They're not even elected by us. So they changed
right.
it.
Right. I like the idea of voting them in, too, personally.
Yeah. But, but I think there's something to be said about
it's a good
somebody not being there for 36 years.
Yeah,
and,
no.
Yeah.
Or, you know,
I like the idea, of you calling me a historian. I like the idea of you calling me a historian.
You're the historian. Yeah. You're the historian. No one's add that to the title. Add that to the business card, right? A couple minutes left in this segment. Speaking of something that's been going on for a long time that I think people are pretty sick of, the Robert Mueller investigation turned 1 year, 1 year old this week. That's how long this has been going on. Some people, you hear some experts, quote unquote, in the news say, you know, it's going to be wrapped up soon. It's almost over. And you hear other people say, this thing's not even going to be over this year. We'll be lucky if this ends in 2019. How sick are you and how sick do you think the people are of hearing about this investigation?
You know, I think it's frustrating to hear disingenuous people talk about how there's, what, like 25 or 30 indictments that came out of this, but really you're talking about 25 Russians or something that had nothing to do with this investigation.
Yeah. All the indictments that have come out of this have nothing to do with what the investigation's purpose is supposed to be.
Same thing the Democrats said about the people that got indicted by Ken Starr, you know, going back to the 90s. So, you know, I think it's frustrating at this point. He needs to wrap it up. He needs to just, you need to say, hey, you either found something regarding collusion and the administration or in the campaign and the Russians or not. You know, it's fine if you find something along the way and you got some business transactions you want to throw Manafort or these guys, you know, indict them for. But, you know, as a whole, I mean, I think we need to come out of this. And if there is no collusion, then we need to say there's no collusion.
Yeah. I for one, will be happy when it's over.
Absolutely.
I'm sick of talking about it. All right, time to take a quick break. When we get back, we will talk more with Skip Weber and Sean Chambliss from Weber Chevrolet. Mayor James Knowles continues to join us, filling in for Chris Arps. Keep it right here. It is the Weekend Report on FM News Talk 97.1. Lips as full as a mother. Welcome back to the Weekend Report. It's FM News Talk 97.1. Tony Colombo and Katie Bailey here. Mayor James Knowles, the mayor of Ferguson, is in for Chris Arps today, who will be back next week. He's on his little tropical vacation, laying on the beach, sipping some mimosas. I want to remind people about the website, 971talk.com/weekendreport. If you missed anything on today's show or you want to hear it again, we had our great interview with Gabe Pfeiffer earlier in the show. Also, Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaffer Great insight from the Lieutenant Colonel about the Gina Haspel situation, his experiences after 9/11 with enhanced interrogation techniques, and his thoughts on all of that that's happening right now surrounding her confirmation. Fascinating, great interview. I'd love to talk to Lieutenant Colonel again. If you missed it or you want to hear it again, always go to 971talk.com/weekendreport. You can download the podcast there, absolutely free. Take the show with you throughout the week. Also, we have our YouTube video player right there on the page as well that we try to update a few times a week, so there's always new content for you. So just continue to check back, 971talk.com/weekendreport. Plenty of content there for you throughout the week. And then, of course, now with our second hour, you can join us every Saturday from 5 to 7. And you, after the show is over at 7 o'clock, you go and you get a beverage. And maybe get something to eat. You kill 30 minutes, and then at 7:30 every Saturday, what's it called? Close Encounters.
Close Encounters. Did you listen last week?
I did. Skip Weber from Weber Chevrolet is here. Sean Chambliss from Weber Chevrolet is here. But Close Encounters, 7:30 tonight and every Saturday night, starring Mark Close and Skip Weber. It is a music show on a talk station.
Yeah, I thought it went pretty well last week, and I can't wait for tonight. We're doing Canadian rockers.
Ooh.
And we'll see if you can guess who some of them might be.
I will rush to the radio to see who they are. That is, and it's only 30 minutes, but it's commercial free.
Yeah.
It's
so we get 30 we
straight
squeeze
minutes,
five songs in each
commercial
each week,
free
yeah.
rock yeah and the I know that you say that Close is the master and you're the Padawan,
yeah,
but you're no slouch when it comes to talking about classic rock.
I learned it from, you know, I'm a historian, what can I say?
Yes, right. you have been labeled a historian. Mayor Knowles did label you the historian.
No,
did
it was
you
a lot of fun.
Question.
It
looked like you had a question about the rock the music show. I thought you were about to say something.
No, we're signing over here.
So. Oh, gotcha.
I'm bad at it.
Yeah, this will be the second episode of Close Encounters.
Right.
And hopefully you guys tune in and you enjoy it. And we can grow that from 30 minutes to 60 minutes. And I just think what a cool thing on Saturday nights to listen to great music on what is otherwise normally a talk station.
Right.
And the two of you guys just picking out whatever you want to play. I'm gonna harp on this. Use the record player.
Oh, I know. We will.
There's an
we
actual
will.
Record player.
Yeah.
Hooked.
Not
up.
Yet tonight, but we'll end up using it.
Yeah.
I think.
I just want to hear that sound. You know, that crackle of the vinyl as it's going around. I mean, how freaking cool is that?
When Chris is here, is he over there scratching?
Him and I are going to sneak in a Run DMC record into the...
Absolutely. And tune in just for that.
Close is going to push play and be like, what is this?
I know, we're asking people to email stuff in. If we get enough a request for stuff, I mean, here, Close likes everything. I went to a country music show last night. I just like live music. So,
right.
So we'll play anything people ask us.
That's awesome. So check it out. 7:30 tonight and every Saturday night, Close Encounters, Skip Weber and Mark Close bringing you music here on FM News Talk 97.1 is so great. The reason that we brought Sean in for this week's segment with Skip is because, like I said last segment, it's not just about giving people the best price on a vehicle at Weber Chevrolet. It's about taking care of your customers for the entire time that they own that vehicle, earning their trust, and then hopefully they come back. I say it almost every week in the spots that I do. A company doesn't stick around for over 100 years if they're doing something wrong. Right. So just talk about that philosophy of why the service department is so important to you.
So we always say that we will sell you the first car and our service department sells you the rest.
Ah, I like
Amen.
It.
Amen.
That's the way we look at it. And let me just tell you about... I cannot be more proud of all of our service departments, but we'll start, you know, Creve Coeur, the original location.
Mm-hmm.
It's not in its original location, but it's been there in Creve Coeur for you know since 1967.
Wow!
So that is kind of what people think a lot of people associate with Weber Chevrolet. So it is our largest service department, and it's one of the larger service departments of any dealership of any brand in St. Louis. And it's one of the hardest jobs, I think, that there is out there, because there's so much traffic and there's so many people, many of them that didn't buy cars from us. And mm-hmm. I'll tell you, that I'm glad that we have Sean here, because he can probably speak to this, but there is no better baptism by fire or first point of contact than the service writers at Weber Chevrolet and Creve Coeur.
Yep.
Because it all starts there. We can have the great, we have some terrific, great master technicians that just can fix anything. But if you don't have good communication up front, and you're not, you know, being nice to someone who's screaming and yelling at you for, you know, when you did nothing wrong, I mean, then you're in trouble with getting that stuff fixed in the first place.
Yeah, and Sean, you're on the front line of that every day.
I'll tell you, yeah, it's definitely a front line.
So I always tell people, and a story I like to tell about you personally, Sean, is that I had a mechanic for years. And everybody, you know, that's one of those things that, you know, not very many people can fix cars. They're not mechanics. They can do a lot of things in their life and their job, but when it comes to their car breaking down, they feel helpless. And you're at the mercy of whoever you think is the, and unfortunately there are some bad people out there that will take advantage of that situation. So when somebody finds a mechanic that they trust, it's such a weight off their chest. And I had a guy that I used for a long time, who moved away, and then Skip hooked me up with you. And it's that unbelievable weight off your chest of, I know that Sean at Weber Chevrolet has got me covered, that I'm going to be taken care of. And that is what I think, like,
that feels good to hear.
You know, what it is important, like this, what Skip just said, you guys in the service department are able to have that communication and build those relationships with people. And it just makes their lives so much easier. Talk about how Skip just described how crazy it is back there, but I've never been there for more than 5 or 10 minutes. When I've come in and dropped it off, you drop it off, you feel like you're pulling into a city. You feel like you're pulling into this, like, metropolitan area, and you see all this craziness going on, and you're like, I'm going to be here for hours, and you guys...
At Weber World, it's one at a time.
Yeah, so talk about what you guys do there.
I'll tell you, from start to finish, as far as an advisor goes, and that's what I do for Weber Chevrolet, I got to start by saying that just the position alone... if you live and work in the St. Louis area, and you do what I do for a living, or you are someone that is working on cars, technicians, Weber Chevrolet is where you want to work. The thing is you're not getting on unless somebody retires. People stay.
Yeah.
It's what a tease. Volumes.
You want a job? Not here.
Exactly. Nope.
Better hope
somebody's got to pass away. Somebody's got to retire.
Oh, how important it is to you to have that relationship with your customers?
It's very important to me. Yeah. We all do. Each rider actually does build a relationship with customers. I have folks, as the other riders do, that come in, they'll wait an extra 15, 20 minutes
just to talk to the
just to deal with me.
That goes back to what I was talking about, that trust factor. And I'm sure the other, and it's just because Skip hooked me up, you know, you were in the right place at the right time. You were the guy that Skip told me to talk to whenever I needed some work done on my truck. And, you know, we just built that relationship. I'm sure the other guys that are there, the other service riders are great, but you're the one that I know. And I think that's how a lot of people are. They know, I know you. I know your face. I know your personality.
Your
I know
family,
the kind of guy you are. Exactly.
What's going
on
in your
life? So you're the guy I want to talk to, because you're the one that I trust, even though I know everybody else's. And I think you guys do an unbelievable job of cultivating those relationships. And I think it goes back to, like you just said, they sell the next car, because now people are like, man, I'm going back to Weber.
Let me tell you something. These guys have such good technical knowledge. They could probably do a lot of these fixing themselves. But what surprises people, that's okay, because what surprises people is that somebody will drive in and they'll say, hey, Mr. Colombo, and they'll remember who they are. And that's what our guys have such a good talent for. And we look for that. And when you have that, it just gets that personal connection even deeper. And it, I think our customers really like it. And let me just backtrack 1 second and say, I do not want to make the impression that every service customer is yelling and screaming. That is actually a rarity.
Right.
Most of the time, these guys have a lot of fun with their service customers because when they are trusted and they have that good relationship, even a bad situation like a broken down car can become okay.
Last point I want to make, because I think it's an important one, and I think it's brilliant on your guys' part, is even when I did have that mechanic that I trusted so much, when I went and I dropped my car off with him, I had to either have somebody follow me up to the shop or come pick me up. You guys provide a rental. You guys provide a vehicle to somebody, even if the car is only going to be for an hour. You let people drive away so they can drop off their car and drive away and not have to have somebody come pick them up, not have to have somebody meet them there later that day or the next day or whatever. How long is my car going to be there? How am I going to get around for the next couple of days if it's going to take a couple of days? You guys provide that.
It's just one less step that you have to worry about. I mean, it's an inconvenience already that you have to bring your vehicle into the shop.
Mm-hmm.
Right away, that's my first thought. I put myself on the other side of the desk.
Uh-huh.
And by doing that, the relationship that are established, they just grow each time that customer comes back.
Yeah,
well, I told
you, you don't waste your whole day. You're still doing your errands. And stuff.
Exactly.
And I told Skip off air. I said, you know, my father's a mechanical contractor, has his own business. You know, small fleet of trucks, and we had one with you guys the other day, and helped us get it back on the road. It's 90 degrees in August. You can't be a heating and cooling contractor with your truck in the shop.
Oh, no.
So you guys did a fantastic job.
I actually helped them.
Yeah, love it. Awesome. I mean, it was great.
Oh, you were the service rep.
I was the service advisor.
That's what we were signing earlier.
Oh, that's cool.
Oh, that was me. Oh, that's very cool.
That's awesome. So Weber Chevrolet, 3 locations. Everything, you learn everything. You find out everything, weberchevrolet.com. But I wanted to bring Sean in today because that service department there at Weber is second to none, and for me, it is really what sets you guys apart from anybody else out there. So, thanks, guys. Stick around because next segment we are going to have Jason Nelson from the Queen Tribute Band, and we are going to have some live music. You're not the only show that gets to play music on this radio station.
All
we're
right.
going to have some
right on.
Live music in the studio next. So keep it right here on the Weekend Report. It's FM News Talk 97.1. All right, welcome back to the Weekend Report. It's FM News Talk 97.1. Now, Katie, Chris is missing it now.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, this is quite a spectacle right here.
Yes, he is missing one of the coolest things we've ever done here on the Weekend Report. We have a packed studio, so it's me, Tony Colombo, Katie Bailey's here. The mayor of Ferguson, James Knowles, is here. He has been filling in for Chris. Mayor, thanks again for everything that filling in today. Skip Weber and Sean Chambliss from Weber Chevrolet still here as well. And now joining us in studio live, Jason Nelson, our good friend from
and very satisfied Weber customer, I may add.
Yeah, absolutely. Just let's get that out there. Let's get that in there.
That's two vehicles now, right?
right.
So, Jason, get right up on that microphone. We've had you on the show a whole bunch. You and I go way back now. It feels like we've been doing this forever. It is getting this whole event is getting really established at this point.
Right.
Somebody to Love, Queen Tribute Show. Tell folks everything that's happening with the show this year and why it's going to be the best one yet.
On Saturday, June 16th at Del Mar Hall, located right next to the pageant in University City, we're doing a combo bill. So we're going to kick the night off with Saints in the City. It's a Bruce Springsteen tribute band at 8:30, and then after them, Somebody to Love, a tribute to Queen.
Yes, and how long have we been doing this now?
This is over 2 years now.
Yeah, I thought it was like 3 years.
I've seen you guys 3 times. Yeah. So
yeah,
this will be my fourth.
Yeah, it's Weber Chevrolet has been a part of the Queen Tribute Show.
Big ups to Weber. Love you guys.
Thanks, Tony. Just remember that now on the day of the show, will you?
Hey, what's more important, telling all the tens of thousands of people listening on the radio or the 1,000 people in the crowd?
No, it's nice of you to say it.
Thank you. the backstory there is that I, on stage at one of the shows, I neglected to mention the sponsor of the event during one of my stage announcements, and I have never heard the end of it. It was really,
well, and of
it
course,
was really
it wasn't
funny.
Like it was the end of the world, but it was, you know, a few alcoholic beverages into
it
the
was,
evening,
right?
And so therefore, we had to give you a little bit of trouble.
You were yelling from the balcony.
It was really funny. It was really funny. So, Jason, talk about, you know, we've seen tribute bands, especially in St. Louis, you know, very much known for El Monstero, the Pink Tribute Show. What made you decide that Queen was the band that you want to do? Because everybody that I talk to that have not seen the show, when I say it's a Queen tribute show, if they are big rock and roll guys, they're like, ooh, can they pull that off? Because Queen is Freddie Mercury, Queen, not an easy band to try to duplicate.
I was challenged, and that's what drove me to it.
Mm-hmm.
In St. Louis, we're a town that loves the tribute bands.
Yeah.
And, like, you don't have the level of enthusiasm in Memphis, Nashville, Austin, Chicago. You just don't. Live Nation told me directly St. Louis is the town for tributes.
And yeah.
In this town, you've got to get it right. I wanted to do justice,
and you do it right.
How Queen did the tunes as they are recorded.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of interpretation from other groups in town how they want to, you know, present their material.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine, but with Somebody to Love, we try to bring what you hear.
Yeah.
On KC95, you know, on the radio, on those recorded tunes.
Let's give everybody a taste of it right now. Who you got with you?
Kevin Lehman on guitar.
Yes.
Joe Ruffino on guitar.
Yes.
And
Jason Nelson.
We're
vocals.
We're going to do our best
all
for
right.
you.
Here we go. Let's hear a little bit of Queen.
A little Hammer to Fall. In comparison to what you'll hear on the evening of the show.
That was freaking great.
I don't have my six-member chorus
right
behind me, and I don't have my mustache.
You don't have your full, you're not in full Freddie Mercury.
We could have joined in if we'd have known that you needed backup singers.
We would have been there. We would have been there absolutely. Absolutely.
You're in the band.
We'd have been there for you if you needed us. We would have been there for you. So talk about, you know, the other thing that I want to talk about when it comes to this show is this venue. I had my first Del Mar Hall experience with you when you guys did the REM Cure Smith's tribute show, which I'm a big REM freak, so I was going to be at that show no matter where it was. But it was my first Del Mar Hall experience. And if you are somebody out there that's listening that has seen the Queen tribute show, I would make the argument that this might be the best sounding one yet. And if you haven't seen this show, this is the one that you don't want to miss, because that building, it feels like when you're in there, it feels like a Blue Note or a Mississippi Nights. It feels like this club that's been there for 40 or 50 years.
Oh, yeah.
But it's brand new. It has that old feeling, and the sound is just incredible. Talk about it.
Top of the line gear, a very conscientious staff, all the tech crew, amazing. The production that they put on there. And my guys at Arch City Audio Visual, I work with a great crew providing my video production and my lighting, and everybody works so well together. Total pros at Del Mar Hall. Love it. Thank you, Pagan Productions.
You've played at the venues that I was just talking about before, the Mississippi Nights type places. Why do we not see more of those type of halls anymore? Why is Del Mar Hall, why are we talking about how special it is when, in my opinion, they all should be like that?
Absolutely. The wonderful talent in this town, you can go out any night of the week in this town and see no less than 3, 4, 5 great bands.
Right.
Old Rock House, Broadway Oyster Bar, Del Mar Hall. You could stay just in the county alone and see shows.
Right.
St. Charles, I'm not even opening up St. Charles County yet, or even on the east side.
Yeah. Skip, we were just talking off the air about you, that weekend that he's playing. It's like a rock weekend for you.
I got concerts on both nights. And that was here. Last year was the same.
Yes, it was the same.
You played Friday night. El Monstero was Saturday night. And there was a good concert at Hollywood Amphitheater on Sunday night. We, just got. That's why we were able to stay out there. We just stayed at Westport.
Right.
We moved into Westport for the night.
Why? Which was awesome. And there's a funny off-air story about hotel rooms and having to move.
What an incredible weekend.
Skip had an adventurous weekend that weekend. Skip, why Weber Chevrolet? Why is it important for you guys to be involved with this show and all the events?
We made a commitment several years ago to become very involved with grassroots music movement in St. Louis. And we sponsor a lot of here. We're the official sponsor of the El Monstero. We have been for a couple of years. And when I heard about this, we jumped right in, and we enjoyed it so much that we signed on for repeat. I think it's big because, the old days, you hear about these rockers' biographies and how they get discovered and how they take off from there, but they were starving artists for so long. And I still think that they are. I mean, many of you guys have to have your real jobs, and can't pursue your real love. So the more support you get, the more you can practice and rehearse and perform. And so I think it's just a natural thing for us to do to try to support.
So we talked about Skip's show now on this station that starts at 7:30, just not very long from now, every Saturday, 7:30, Close Encounters, Skip and Mark playing music here on FM News Talk 97.1. That's right, a music show on a talk station. And we have that because this city is so, relates so much with the music scene that we've always had. And I've grown up here, and I've always heard about the great music scene that we have here and the great bands that have originated here. Do I feel that way just because I'm from here and I don't know anything else, or does St. Louis really stand out on the national scene?
Absolutely stands out.
Yeah,
I've done touring road work across the nation, and when I come home, I'm amazed. We are in this musical bubble.
You never really understand how lucky you are when you're so close to it until you get it taken away from it. There's a lot of places. I mean, of course, New York City's got all these clubs and everything. I wouldn't trade St. Louis music scene for New York City.
No.
I wouldn't trade St. Louis's for L.A. or
and
Dallas,
you know why?
Or Atlanta.
Because I know you and you know somebody else. They're the 7 degrees of this community.
Mm-hmm.
It is very close.
I think it's also that this was one of the pioneering cities for album rock.
Yeah.
So rock music above all else is where the city, but it's not just anymore because it's split off, but this city here has got that deep
just
history.
Actually just a few seconds an album and play it for its entirety.
Yeah.
A few seconds left, Jason. Tell people how they can get tickets and learn more about the show so they don't miss it.
Go to DelmarHall.com or Ticketmaster. They're available on there Saturday, June 16th at Del Mar Hall.
Yep. Somebody to Love, Queen Tribute Show. I'll be there. I can't wait. I've never missed one. I don't plan on ever missing one. You can also go to my Twitter, at TonyColombo971. I've got the information for the show posted right there. So, again, Mayor James Knowles, thank you so much. Skip Weber, thank you so much. Jason Nelson, you got everybody from the Queen Tribute Show. Thank you guys for being here. Chris will be back next week. Great show. If you missed anything, go to 971talk.com/weekendreport. Download the podcast, listen to it again, and we will see you next Saturday at 5 o'clock. It is the Weekend Report on FM News Talk 97.1.
You give me a feeling of ecstasy from my toe to my head. From my head, lying in our bed. A pretty little angel, my pretty little queen.